You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being with us on today's show. We're going to move a little bit away from Razorback basketball. We're tired of talking about what does this team need to do to win games. We'll get into that a little bit later. We're going to have fun at the end of the show. Clay Henry, the founder of Hogs Illustrated, is going to be in studio with us. He's in Fayetteville today, and this will be the first time that we've had him on this podcast set, even though Clay and I, Chip, launched this podcast in a very old form for Hogs Illustrated. We call it the HI Radio. You know where we did the podcast from?
No.
His kitchen table.
We started here in Fayetteville, though, not down in...
Right. No. This is when he lived in Fayetteville. Yeah. This was back in 2008. We started this podcast at his kitchen table. We called it HI Radio.
HI.
And so it's taken on a little bit of a different look nowadays. But we want to talk about Razorback baseball today. Dave Van Horn was speaking to media members yesterday in advance of the start of baseball practice. The team will be on the field for its first team practice next Friday at Baum Walker Stadium. They're going through a two-week period right now where, I don't know the exact rules, but basically it's instructional workouts, small group workouts. They can spend a very limited amount of time with their coaching staff, and then obviously things really kick off next Friday, and that's when you start to see the scrimmaging for 3 weeks leading up to the season opener, which this year is February 14th against Washington State at Baum Walker Stadium. They'll start with a four-game weekend series against the Cougars, and then they'll go down to Arlington, Texas the next week for the annual games at Globe Life Field, the home of the Texas Rangers. This year, Arkansas are going to play Kansas State, TCU, and Michigan in Arlington. Obviously,
K-State. Should be three good games, yeah.
Well, ought to be great crowds, too. You know, for people who haven't been to Arlington for the baseball games, I kind of liken it to a bowl game, like a February baseball bowl experience. The crowds when Arkansas plays there are phenomenal. Typically bigger than what you'll see at Baum, even, you know, because I mean Baum, you can only have so many people in the building. And, you know, you're playing in a 40,000-seat ballpark in Arlington. They played TCU on a Saturday night there a couple of years ago, Chip, and there were 21,000 people, I think, in the ballpark for that game. I would guess, even though TCU and Fort Worth only about 25 minutes away from the ballpark, it was probably about two-thirds of Razorback fans. Obviously, a lot of people go down there from Arkansas, a lot of Razorback fans in the Dallas area who go to that game. It was the largest attendance that year for any game outside of the College World Series in Omaha.
You know, it's February. It's, you know, cold outside, but that's climate controlled to play in that stadium. And, you know, people want to get out and be able to sit in comfort. And this gives also a lot of Arkansas fans who may not – who live in the Texas and wherever, and the ones who, you know, live here that can't get to games at Baum or whatever, a chance to go down, spend the weekend in Dallas, watch some good baseball, and not have to worry about rainouts or anything like that.
So Dave Van Horn will play you a few sound bites from what he had to say yesterday during his long conversation with reporters, just to kind of give you a background too. We are knee deep right now in putting together our Hogs Illustrated baseball preview. And so, you know, we've been talking to players, talking to assistant coaches, and so we're kind of armed with a little bit of baseball knowledge here. But this is what Dave Van Horn had to say yesterday about his 2025 team and the personality of the team.
A little more verbal, vocal. So far, so good. We feel like they get along real well. That's the feedback I've gotten from returners, and then the new guys just seem to really like it here and like what's going on. And I think they're excited about the schedule we've lined up, which is ridiculously tough, but you know, it'll be fun.
You know, one of the things that jumps out to me, Chip, is you look through the roster, is how old this team is.
Yeah, they're a lot of veteran.
And, you know, from a pitching standpoint, your four starting pitcher candidates are a sophomore, Gabe Gackle, who has got a lot of potential there.
There's
the potential, I think, that, you know, and we'll see how he develops over the next couple of years, but I think the potential is there for him to be one of the best pitchers who has ever come through Arkansas. I really believe that. He was a freshman All-America last year. Chances are that he'll be a first-round pick if not first round, a high round pick in 2026. They've got him for another couple of seasons. Yep. And then there's three juniors. You got Gage Wood, who's been in the program for 2 years, and then you've got a couple of transfers, Landon Bidelsees, big 6'6" pitcher from Ohio State, and then Zach Root, another left-hander from East Carolina. Bidelsees and Root were two of the high pitcher prospects in the transfer market last year, and I am not comparing them to Paul Skeens, don't get me wrong, but when you look at who the best pitchers in the SEC have been over the last few years, it in a lot of cases has been pitchers who have done well in other, you know, power conferences, or they've done well in these mid-major conferences, and then they've come into the SEC. And I think it's a combination of some different things, whether it be Skeens or Chase Dahlander or the other pitchers who have come in and had success. Number one, I think there's a hunger to prove themselves against the best
Conference in America. Yeah,
the best hitting competition. And then there's also an appreciation for playing in a program where you got people coming out and watching you, where in a lot of cases, say like Paul Skeens at Air Force, I mean, how many people did he really pitch in front of? And so there's
tens. Tens of people.
Yeah. I call those parents and girlfriend games. Yeah. So anyway, this is I think that with Root and Bidelsees, we'll see how they do. They're very excited about how many strikes they threw in the fall, which is usually a pretty good indication of, you know, success in the next year. I think they've got a chance to be starters. We'll see what happens with Wood and Gackle. I think Gackle's going to be their Friday night guy, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the ace. But
it's an old pitching lineup.
Yeah,
or rotation.
Yeah, I was talking with Bubba Carpenter the other day. Matt mentioned the baseball preview that we're about to copy deadline's coming up on it next week. But the story that I'm writing is on former Arkansas players who have come back to the area and have launched baseball academies, and Bubba Carpenter being the first person to do that, former Hog to do that. But we were talking about that, about how, Matt, last year so much expectation was put on Hagan Smith. I mean, it was how Hagan goes, we're going to go. And for the most part, it went really well. But in the regional, it didn't go so well. And I don't know that Arkansas had a real fallback plan on that. It was kind of like, oh, my God, Hagan didn't do well. We're doomed.
The stat of the year last year was that when Hagan Smith started for Arkansas, they won 81% of their games.
Correct.
And that fell in the postseason because you'll remember he started a game against Kentucky at the SEC tournament where he didn't pitch a whole lot. And then obviously what happened at the regional. So 81% of the time, though, whenever he started, Arkansas won their games.
Yeah.
They won all 58% of all of their other games,
right?
Which shows you the value that they had in Hagan. I mean, it was like every time he went out on a Friday night, they felt like they would win the game. And this is a good segue into the next soundbite from Dave Van Horn, which talks about the pitching staff. But Chip, it's weird when you look at this staff, because again, they've got a lot of older pitchers in there, a lot of guys who I think are going to be drafted high either this summer or next summer. It's weird when you say you took the National Pitcher of the Year, Golden Spikes finalist Hagan Smith, off of that staff, and you think this year's staff could be better. But I think that's the case. I think it's a more well-rounded
top to
staff
bottom.
Than it was last year.
No doubt, top to bottom, that they are a more well-rounded staff. And like Bub and I were talking, if Gackle gets in trouble, there's not an oh God moment. Like, oh God, you know, we're just doomed. It's okay, next man up, next man up, next man up. And I think that's what's going to set this team apart from the last couple of years, is you got a lot of guys, you got a lot of high level guys, not one elite level guy. You got about six or seven guys who can win on Friday night.
The key to all of this is staying healthy in your bullpen, because what we saw happen last year, we were saying some of the same things last year. They've got a very deep staff, and they did. And, you know, for the first 2 months of the season, that threesome of Hagan Smith and Mason Molina and Brady Tigard on the weekend was great. I mean, they got off to a great start. But what happened was Molina got banged up and Tigard got hurt. And then as the season went along, Hunter Dietz got hurt. Yeah. And Colin Fisher hurt his elbow and had to have the internal brace put in. And Cooper Dossett ended up having to have Tommy John surgery, and he wasn't available. And so all of a sudden, those pitchers who are at the back of your bullpen, they have to start pitching in real meaningful innings, whether it be on an SEC weekend or in the regional. and it just didn't go as well as it would have had you had the arms that you kind of built your team for that moment. So, you know, health is it plays a huge key in this. There's
no going
to be injuries in the pitching staff. There's always injuries in the pitching staff. The key is going to be, you know, can they make it through a season not having the injuries to those real critical arms that
crippling,
I think they had
crippling,
last year.
Crippling injuries, yeah.
But this is what Dave Van Horn had to say about his pitching staff.
You know, the interesting thing about this staff, and, you know, you guys are asking about individual players, and I love talking about the players after they've been here a while, and we've seen a lot, but, you know, trying to stay away from it a little bit because we still have a lot we have to prove, but, you know, we don't have Smith this year, and that's a once every now and then type of guy that you get to be around, that talent and what he did for our team. I mean, you take him off of our team last year, we were probably pretty average because we were a really good fielding team and we didn't hit real well and we weren't very dynamic as far as some other things, but we probably overachieved. We don't have that guy, but what we have is we have a staff and we have a lot of good pitchers that work hard and I think they just make each other better.
And a lot of these pitchers, I mean, again, you lose Hagen Smith and you lose Mason Molina and you lose Brady Tigert, but a lot of the pitchers are pitchers that we were talking about last year, and they're back, and they're a year older. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Some of them, I think there's a question about what's their role going to be. Like Ben Bibee, we thought last year he was going to be a midweek starter, and he did make some midweek starts. Now in a deeper staff, I don't know what his role is, but there is some talent, some arm talent there.
Probably going to be coming out of the pen. And who knows? He may be a setup guy. He may end up being a great closer. We don't know.
Now, Will McIntyre's had some levels of success. He's had some levels of disappointment during his career, but he's back. He gives you at least a veteran guy there in the bullpen that you can lean on. Christian Fouch, I mean, this guy looks like Ben Joyce right now. I mean, he threw a 101-mile-an-hour fastball last year. I was talking to some people. They think that there's a lot more there in the tank with him. It's not all about throwing hard. I mean, if it's only about throwing hard, then some of the pitchers who have come through here and struggled, they would have had a lot better. But the point being that there is a lot of options there in that bullpen. I think they're excited about Aidan Jimenez and what he might be able to add to the staff. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery. He's a transfer from Oregon State. They think they'll have him ready early in the season. If he's the same pitcher that Oregon State had, then there's some excitement there. But you never know what you're going to get coming off of those elbow injuries. But the point being with the pitching, there's a lot of arm talent there. There's a lot of excitement about
a lot of depth.
You know, the options that they have in that bullpen. And then I was talking to someone here recently, but Wood, Gackle, and Beidelsees, who are three of the pitchers who could start for this team, they also have closer stuff. And so, you know, I think all four of those starter candidates are going to get to start that opening weekend because they got a four-game series against Washington State, and then you got to make a decision about what you're going to do with your pitchers. There's a very real chance that if Wood or Beidelsees do not make it into the starting rotation, that they might be this year's closer.
Well, that's unique
because you don't see a lot of instances where a pitcher has the stuff to start and to close, and then certainly you don't see a lot of staffs that have multiple pitchers with that kind of stuff.
Well, and this also lets Dave kind of ride with the hot hand because he has so much depth in that pitching staff. If somebody, you know, if somebody has the hot hand, you know, he can ride that for a while. And it's a great luxury. It looks like they've spent a lot of time building this staff up, giving them a lot of options. They've got a lot of moving pieces, a lot of moving parts here. And you hadn't even mentioned the freshman they got from Oklahoma, the kid who was like 101, 102. I've gone blank on his name. The kid from Roland, Oklahoma.
Oh, Carson Wiggins.
Carson Wiggins, yeah. Who, my God, when the team bus pulls up in front of the stadium, this kid gets off the bus, you're like, oh, my God, look at that guy.
Well, I think he turned down a fair amount of money to come to Arkansas too, you know, kind of hedging his bets that once he gets into the program that you know, he could go from being a probably second-day pick is what he would have been out of high school to now he could be a first-day pick.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a sophomore draft eligible next year too. So he's got more leverage than a lot of players have when they end up coming to college. The number of – Cole Gibler is a left-hander from Kansas City who I know there's – a lot of excitement about, and the, you know, the list just goes on and on. It's a very deep staff, and again, if they can stay healthy, I think Arkansas's gotten a chance to do some things this
year. No doubt.
The big question going into the preseason is about who's going to play first base? Who's on first? And yeah. Dave Van Horn said yesterday, he said basically it's kind of like an open tryout over there. I think they've got five players who they're looking at first base. These are the players who I think they're looking at there. Michael Anderson, who is a transfer from Rhode Island. He's got your prototypical first base body. He has got power in that bat. You've got Cam Kozel, who is more, I think, of a middle infielder, probably about 5 foot 10, 5'11", something like that. You remember Trevor Ezell made it work, though, at first base.
Yeah.
And he's one of the better defensive first basemen that they've had. So Cam Kozel, a transfer from Vanderbilt. You've got Rocco Pepi. He's a transfer from Fresno State. He's more of an outfielder, but I think he's going to get a look at first base. You got Reese Robinette, who's been in the program for a few years, another prototypical-looking corner or first baseman. And then Cahill Aloy, Vahiva's younger brother from BYU, as much power as anyone in his bat. The thing is, with all of these players, I think that they all have what they're looking for in terms of power from a first baseman, because you need to have power at first base. But the question is, do they have a glove that is good enough to play there? And I think that's where why there's still a question. They want to evaluate these players defensively more.
Well, you know, first base, Matt, is a position that a lot of people look at and go, well, just put anybody can play first base. Well, that's not true. That is not true. There's a lot that happens at first base. You can't just throw a guy over there and go, just catch the balls when they throw them to you. There's a lot more to first base than that. But the thing about it is, in baseball, if you hit, they will find a place for you to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's right. And here's the thing about first base, and Dave mentioned this whenever he was talking yesterday, is that a first baseman touches the ball more than anybody else on the field except for the pitcher and the catcher.
Yep.
It's kind of like in football, you don't really think about the center touches the ball every play.
Right.
You know, you think about the quarterback touches it, but you don't think about the center. Very similar thing here is you know, are you sure-handed enough to be able to play that position? At second base, I think Nolan Souza has got the upper hand there. Vahiva Aloy, he looks like a first-round draft pick. At least that's what the projections are going into the season. Obviously, that can change one way or the other. You know, he could go up, he could go down. But he'll be Arkansas' shortstop, and I suspect he'll play most games. Brent Iredell is a transfer from New Mexico Junior College. This is a native Australian.
Yeah,
and I think he's
threw me for a loop when I went to interview him after that game I covered. I wasn't expecting that accent.
Expecting the accent.
Yeah,
I think he's got a chance to be a really special hitter for them.
Yeah.
He was probably the hardest out on the team.
Really good approach at the plate
during the fall.
Yeah,
Ryder Helfrich probably going to be the catcher. I don't think there's much. In fact, I'll take the word probably out there. He is going to be the catcher. I think that there's a chance for Helfrich. They trust him defensively. I think he's got a good bat. You know, a catcher's bat, it tends to wear down as their legs get more tired throughout the season. But I think that this is probably the best all-around catcher, potentially, that they've had since James McCann.
Oh, okay. Big words.
But, I mean, you think about it. You know, a lot of the catchers that they've had have been more defensive-minded catchers, and then if you get some offense from them, great. You look at what Helfrich did last year. He and Vahiva Aloy had the two best years of anybody at the Cape Cod League.
Yeah.
And so there's some power in Helfrich's bat that I think that they could potentially get there. I'm not saying he's going to be James McCann. I'm just saying I think he's got the chance to be the best all-around catcher since James played here over a decade ago. Outfield, Charles Davalon, I'm sorry, is from Florida Gulf Coast. He's from Quebec, and he looks like a leadoff hitter, probably going to be the center fielder. Logan Maxwell, a transfer from TCU, he's probably going to play in left. Kendall Diggs coming back from a torn labrum. We'll see with him. You know, can he get back into right field? I think if he's healthy and he's the Kendall Diggs of old, he's going to play in right field. Justin Thomas is a player.
Boy, he's a wild. I'm telling you, that kid's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, he does. He is, and so for those who don't know Justin, he is a transfer from a Florida junior college. He started his career at Georgia. He's one that could potentially work his way into the outfield.
Yeah, I think he will. He's going to have a big role on this team. I'm not sure what that's going to be, but he's going to have a big role.
And then obviously DH is just going to be one of those things where, you know, who doesn't get onto the field defensively? They've got some DH options with this team. So I like the look of this Arkansas team. You know, Perfect Game and D1 Baseball are the only polls that are out so far in the preseason. Perfect Game had Arkansas ranked number 13. I've touched on this before. I think there's only two voters in that PG poll. And so if somebody's high on the team and somebody's low on the team, then you can get.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably why Arkansas ended up at number 13 in that one. They're number 5 in D1 baseball. We had Jacob Rudner on our show a couple of weeks back. He said they're going to be number 5 in the or they're going to be in the top 5 of the Baseball America poll when it comes out. We use the coaches poll as our poll of record, and that ought to be out toward the end of the month. So a lot of excitement about Razorback baseball. I want to play this one other clip. This is an extended clip from Dave Van Horn, and this is what he had to say about the team's offense. They're going to have a different looking offense this year, just in terms of you know, people will use the word hitting, and that's fine, but you really run an offense as a baseball team. You know, the things that you do in terms of base running and some of the decisions that you make and how
you slot your lineup, what guys do what better, setting them up for who comes next.
But you know this because you've been around baseball a lot. A lot of old baseball guys, they don't like to use the word offense in baseball. They like to you've heard this, right?
Yeah.
But you know, but this is what Dave Van Horn though had to say about the team's offense and the offense they're going to run this year.
Yeah, and this team has power, and we can hit it over your head, but we also have really worked on other things. Maybe gone back to more of my early years of the way we did things because we didn't have as much power. But I mean, Coach Thompson and I, Coach Warren, as we sat down after the season and we talked about a lot of things, and we're all on the same page. And you know, you think about our team since Nate got here, they've been powerful and they've been good. And the last couple of years were not so good. And, you know, so we knew we had to make some adjustments. And a lot of it has to do with the personnel you have. And the personnel we have now fits more what we want to do here day in and day out. But you still, if you want to win in the SEC, you've got to be able to hit the ball over the fence. And what I mean by that is, it's hard to score sometimes with the pitching that we face.
Yeah.
So if you get a walk and you can hit a home run off a Friday night starter, that's a good thing because, you know, a lot of these guys are pitching in the big leagues and they're going to be big league all-stars coming out of this league and Power 5 teams or anywhere. And you've got to be able to score quick or when a mistake's made. It's hard to get 3 hits in an inning, you know, at this level and especially in league play. The big innings come with a single and a walk or an error, and then somebody pops one in the gap or out of the park. That's how you separate yourself. But we wanted to make sure that we could do a little bit of everything, and hopefully that happens.
We want to tell you, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. You can get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscription will give you 20-plus issues to our Hogs Illustrated magazine, including our baseball preview. More on that in just a second. Plus complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509, 479-684-5509. If you get subscribed now, you'll get our baseball preview. That's going to go to the printer, I believe, what, about 10 days?
Yeah, we copy deadline on that's coming up next Tuesday. We'll get that turned out and should be ready to go the next week just in time for our Sports Club luncheon.
Would you call that our most popular magazine issue?
I think that in the football preview, yeah both. And this one is just loaded with all baseball information. So if you're like I am, if you're a seam head like I am, that's the issue you do not want to miss it. And Matt, like you said, the coverage that we have, unmatched, and you want to be part of this. You want to be on the team. You want to be in the know. Subscribe. Hit it.
Yeah, this baseball preview, it's going to include a lot of interesting things, including an analysis on all of the players from their different position coaches. That's a really neat feature that we've got in here.
Yep.
Chip just mentioned the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Bubba Carpenter and Logan Forsythe are going to be our next two speakers at the HI Sports Club. That's going to be January 30th for Bubba and February 6th for Logan Forsythe, noon at Home 2 Suites, both days in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com for Bubba Carpenter on January 30th and Logan Forsythe on February 6th at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club.
And Courtney Dyfel on February 27th.
Yeah. Yep, coming
for
right
softball.
Around the corner.
Yep.
Softball season starting, I believe, in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so it's coming up on us quick.
And they're good too, Matt.
Yeah.
They're very good.
They always are.
Yep.
All right. I think we got a lot more coming. We're going to talk more baseball, some rule changes that are happening in baseball this year. Also, some news coming out of the Football Coaches Convention this week relating to the transfer portal. We'll get on to that here in just a minute. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Baseball rule changes this year. There are a few of them, and then there have been a few that have been proposed for next year. We'll talk about those now. One of the big changes in baseball this year, Chip, is that they're going to have the ability to have tablets in the dugout,
yeah.
And they're going to be able to coach with tablets, very similar to what you see in college football or the NFL
football,
now.
Right. Get a chance to see video, you know, where location of pitches is and things like that. It'll be beneficial. So what we're seeing is the cheating factor might go down a little bit.
you said it.
No, it won't. Baseball's going to always have sign stealers and things like that. So they can have all the iPads they want. There's still going to be that going on.
You know, in baseball, what you're seeing, though, like there's so much emphasis that's put on technology now, whether it be what you see in these pitching centers with, you know, TrackMan or Rapsodo cameras or, you know, all of these different things that they use to basically pinpoint every single minute detail of a pitcher. I wrote a story several years ago about a mound that is starting to get, you know, more traction nationally, but Arkansas was one of the first places that used it. It's called a Smart Mound. It was made by a company down in Little Rock, and it measures the force that a pitcher puts onto the ground whenever he pitches, and they're able to, you know, make mechanical changes and you know, teach pitchers based off of this Smart Mound. And so, and the same thing goes with hitters. You know, they're using a lot of technology. And so what this is going to allow the coaches to do is really take the same technology that they are able to use in practice and apply it to the games, because as of last season, you weren't able to do that as much.
I don't know. It's just, you know, it's just more just more things. You know, talking about analytics and things like that, and I know that's all important and everything, and we laugh and joke about this, like, you know, exit velo and barrel percentage and all that, and I'm an old-school guy, Matt. You know, to me, some of this is, yeah, the exit velo was great. Did the ball hit grass or was it caught? You know, that's what I want to know. Did you get on base? Did you move a runner? You know, that's the analytics that I pay attention to, is what did you do to get the guy in front of you who got on ahead of you around to score? That's what I want to know. That's the only thing I care about.
The double base, you're probably going to see that a lot more this year. Yep. I like that. We saw that at the SEC tournament last year.
Should be fewer collisions at first base and hopefully fewer like ankle type injuries and things like that. That's a good thing.
You know, we saw Brady Slavens, and you wonder at the 21 SEC tournament, and I felt like that was a huge turning point for that team whenever he turned his ankle on one of those bang-bang plays at first.
Yep.
And, you know, that was used as an example, I think, by a lot of people last year whenever they used the double base at the SEC tournament. Is that may not happen if you've got the double base. I like that.
I do, too. I like that. And I'm hoping that also – umpires will be pay closer attention to the running lane. Make sure the runner to first from home to first stays in that running lane. That would also help reduce injuries.
Speaking of umpires, there's going to be more sticky stuff inspections, like Major League Baseball style this year in college.
Yeah, going to make them roll down their waistband of their pants to see if they got anything in there, and look in their gloves and that kind of thing. Again. Just taking away the purity of the game by using a little sticky substance from now on.
Another change in college baseball this year, the batter has to be alert to the pitcher by 12 seconds left on the pitch clock as opposed to 10 seconds last year. So less time fidgeting outside of the batter's box.
Yeah, less batting glove adjustment time.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different changes that are happening. It's not like any one huge rule change, it feels like, this year in college baseball, but there's a lot of little things that certainly are going to play a difference. And then the Baseball Coaches Convention wrapped up recently in Washington, and some of the there was a lot of talk about roster size in the fall. As in the post-house settlement world, because now baseball teams are going to have to go down to roster sizes of 34 in the season. But the question has been whether or not they can have more players in the fall and then make cuts at semester, similar to what happens now. And the coaches have proposed a 38-man fall roster. We'll see if the NCAA approves that, but that's what the coaches want to see. And then a rule that I think is going to get changed by next year, not for the 25 season, but for the 2026 baseball season, is that, right now I mentioned they're in a 2-week period where they're doing, small group workouts, instructional workouts, and then they'll be able to go into 3 weeks of team practice. The new rule, if it's approved, and they've recommended this, the new rule would say that you have 5 weeks of team practice leading up to that first game, more in line with what you see with spring training. Pitchers, they go to spring training and they're there for 7 or 8 weeks leading up, and you don't get that time. And the thing that happens is that you don't get as like the coaches are not able to monitor the players as much the way the rules are written right now. And so their thought is that there could be fewer injuries.
Right.
Also it just helps get the players ready. And the thing that college baseball faces, Chip, that Major League Baseball doesn't face, what's the weather like whenever Major League Baseball starts?
Well,
it's cold in Chicago and Cleveland and some of those places.
Yeah.
But it's usually pretty nice in April.
And they
think about what they're starting on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, but baseball usually, their first couple, 2 or 3 weeks of scheduling, they try to keep games more in the warmer climates before.
But you can't guarantee that.
You can't.
Like it could be 75 degrees at Baum on February 14th when Washington State rolls in here, and it might be 38 with a snow shower coming in.
It could be.
And there's more risk of an injury, especially to your pitchers when you're pitching in cold weather. And so the run-up, if you've got more time to run up to the season, I think it can help your pitchers injuries.
I like that rule, Matt, because this allows coaches to also monitor the weight room and the stretching or whatever. You kind of leave the guys to kind of do their own thing. A lot of times they – slack off or whatever, you really need to monitor what they're doing, because that's injury prevention down the road.
Get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. We've got an award-winning team of reporters and photographers. They bring the subscribers most trusted Razorback news with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories, and all your favorite teams. We got stories on our website right now about Arkansas's indoor track and field teams. The indoor season begins tomorrow.
It's here.
With the Arkansas Invitational in Fayetteville over at Randall Tyson Track Center. Stories like that on our website. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Football coaches have proposed at their coaches' convention this week in Charlotte a 10-day transfer window that would be after the bowl games finish in January, basically trying to cut down on this madness in December. This is just a proposal from the coaches. How much weight that carries once it gets to the NCAA level and the people who make, they vote on these rule changes, I don't know. But this is what coaches have said. they think it'll help them in December. Number one, just in terms of it takes one thing off of their plate in December, right. a very big thing off of their plate in December when they're trying to sign players and they're trying to get ready for a bowl game and they're trying to do some of these other things. But then they also think that it might salvage the bowls to a certain extent. I have my doubts that this is going to pass at the NCAA level, and I have my doubts that even if it does pass, that it would hold up in to a court challenge, because yeah. it seems a lot of the decisions that the NCAA makes, they don't hold up to court challenges. But this is what the coaches want to see.
So the national championship game is this weekend. So that's what the 20th, the 19th, whatever that date is. So from that date, 10 days takes you to the first week of February. Doesn't college classes start around the second week of January?
I think that's another yeah. area where this gets kind of tricky is that yeah. can you get the players enrolled into their new school
there you go.
In
yeah.
time?
Yeah.
And it gets confusing because, you know, like the University of Arkansas, they operate on a traditional, you know, spring, fall semester schedule. You've got some schools that operate on, three semester
yeah.
school sessions.
Smaller semester, yeah.
A lot of West Coast schools, I think, are on that three semester deal. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know how you can do this.
I don't either.
I think it would be very difficult.
I think in principle it's a great idea. I do think in principle it is. I just don't think logistically it will work.
You know what I've said make it a one-day transfer window. One day, everybody imagine? Gets in.
For us, we would love that.
It would be great. Everybody, you got to make your decision in one day. You get in or you get it. Like that's – or you're coming back.
I mean, Matt, you know, and Ethan, you and Ethan talked about this. I mean, basically what we've been doing is you're just hitting refresh over and over and over and over again all day long on all the Twitter accounts of all the players and Instagram accounts going, okay, who's still in? Who's out? Who's in? Who's out?
Well, then you got the players who they get in and they get out and they get in and they get out. And it's just it's so hard to keep track of doing what.
Did you see the five-star receiver that was at Texas that left and went to Washington is now no longer with the on the roster at Washington? Jontae Cook. He's off the roster now.
So we're Tykeese Crawford, who's been here at Arkansas. He was committed to UCLA, and now he's committed to West Virginia. Man, I mean, it's hard to keep track of everything that's going on.
Well, I mean, what if you miss an NIL payment, they leave or whatever. I mean, I don't – it's contracts are coming, Matt. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to have a contract situation. They're going to have to do that.
I think that's probably right. All right, Chip, we appreciate you being here. Clay Henry is going to be on set with us here
the legend.
Just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Clay Henry, the founder of Hogs Illustrated, is here in studio with us. Clay, good to see you.
Well, thank you. That's thank you for an invitation.
I was telling Chip earlier, you know, this is kind of the next generation of the podcast that we started at your kitchen table with apple pancakes. You remember
we
those?
Did that?
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I mean, tell people about what we did.
We would sit down and tape things. Yeah, and I was like, okay, we're going to have apple pancakes, which was something my dad always did on special occasions. And I said, you were special, Matt.
Yeah. So, I mean, we would record.
People called you special before?
Well, I don't know if they've done it in a good way, but
that's what I mean.
But we would we'd go to Clay's house and we would sit at his dining room table, and you know, we'd eat and we'd talk about what we were going to talk about, and then we'd just do a podcast. And I mean, like, the setup I can remember was crazy. I had a camera that I ran a mic cord into, and we talked with a microphone, going back and forth with the microphone. And then, you know, this is like really early days of podcasts, and I and it was complicated on how to get a podcast out to the web at that point. You had to do...
Was that about 04, 05?
Yeah, more about 07, 08, yeah. Somewhere in there. But I remember my brother, who had a little bit of IT experience, he helped me get a website built that we were able to pull a feed from and get the... I mean, it was crazy. And then now everybody's got a podcast.
Yeah, but ours was the best.
It was one of the first. I found we ought to play this. I actually found the...
You found it?
Well, I found a I found the open that we had for our podcast a few weeks back. I don't remember what I was looking for, but I ran across this file from, you know, like 2008 or something, and it was the open that we had for that podcast. But
did Charlie Brown bark during that podcast a
couple
of times?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah,
Charlie was Clay's chocolate lab. We've been talking about baseball all morning because we're putting out our baseball preview. I do want to take a minute to talk about basketball, though. 0-4 in the SEC, obviously not going the way they want it to. What do you see from the
team? Yeah, listen, you just mentioned founder of Hogs Illustrated. So I'm going to go back to 1992 and started a magazine, had no employees, had no photographs. If you're going to call yourself Hogs Illustrated, you need photographs first. Didn't have any. So I know this is apples to oranges, but it's, if you start something from scratch and you have no players, it isn't easy.
Yeah.
And it was about 3 years before I felt like Hogs Illustrated was rolling. And I'm going to go to, say, Arkansas football and basketball, and you think about first-year coaches. No one's ever started a program with zero players.
Yeah.
And the only two coaches that I think have been successful in their first year would be probably Lou Holtz in his first year, inherited in a wonderful team from Frank Broyles. You know, they went to the Orange Bowl, beat Oklahoma. And then I would say Houston Nutt inherited a pretty good team from Danny Ford, really good lineman. They did very well. You know, and you think Dave Van Horn. Well, they really struggled for much of that year. They did get into postseason. Didn't do well. I think they lost twice to Lamar or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible to think that we expected and we talked about the Final Four all last summer as far as expectations for John Calipari, because he's done that. But I think that we understand now that, you know, injuries gobbled up a lot of his practice time early. I think they'll play better, but let's also think about what the SEC is, and no one's ever faced this kind of SEC basketball, Matt. Michigan, which pretty good. Are they 0-2 against Oklahoma in Arkansas, you know, in mm-hmm. SEC play? And those teams are not at the top of the SEC. No. So that puts it in perspective, and I still like the hire, and I still like the concept of funding him right.
Well, and I think, you know, I mean, to your point, it feels like people are basing right now the entire success of Calipari based on his first season. He was hired for more than just the 2024-25 season. I haven't heard him say this. I suspect that he regrets only signing 9 quality players. I would suspect that whenever they go out and they get in the portal this offseason, that they're going to, you know, probably, I don't know if they're going to get the full 13 or 15 or whatever the number is going to be after the house settlement, but I suspect they're going to have more quality players. I think they probably learned their lesson, because that was what everybody said last offseason was, this is great in theory, but what happens if they have injuries? And then they've been as snake bit injury-wise as any basketball team I can remember here in a long time.
Well, he's mentioned a couple of times already that the jury's out, you know, that he'll assess mm-hmm. you know, the 9 concept later in the year. I bet he's already assessed it and wished he had a few more. I think his comment when we asked was, well, if you lose 2 players, well, he lost more than 2. you know, to injuries. You know, there was times where he was scrimmaging with six of those nine.
And
then you're talking about the two prizes of that class were
Nelly and Adu.
Yeah, and didn't have them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that something people don't probably realize is that they've had injuries among their so-called scholarship walk-ons. You know, like Lawson Blake has got a torn Achilles and he can't practice. And they've had some other injuries to where people would say, well, okay, well, you only, you know, you might have three players injured, but you could bring some. I don't think they've had 10 total to scrimmage at a lot of points this year. It's been, again, unlike anything I've really ever seen in terms of the number of injuries, not just to the maybe the forward-facing players, but also to some of those players that they bring in for development.
If you want to equate that to baseball, to me, it would be like you lost for all of your preseason game, your starting rotation pitchers. And you'd say Dave Van Horn would be pulling his hair out, you know, if that happened.
Yeah.
And it can happen. But it's I just think that, you know, you're in it for more than, you know, the first – half of the first season.
I was willing to excuse the first three losses because Tennessee and Florida, they look like championship contenders to me, and then Ole Miss looks really good. I mean, like, the more you watch them, the more you realize that that was a good team. That if they can go into Tuscaloosa and beat that Alabama team on their home court, then, I mean, why couldn't they go into Fayetteville and beat Arkansas? The LSU game, I felt like, though, was a real big disappointment the other night because LSU, they're shorthanded. Arkansas got off to such a good start there, and then I can't figure out what's going on with this team that causes them to get off to a good start and then not be able to sustain that.
So what I see is an unpolished team, and it goes back to the lack of practice time, the lack of scrimmage time. And I always listen to Nolan Richardson say, you know, in scrimmages you fix things, in practice you fix things. You know, judgments, decisions. And then the other thing that Nolan always told me, you do not play true freshmen at crunch time. You don't expect them to carry your team at crunch time. And I saw in the end of the first half and then down the stretch, you know, that Flan, Richmond, and Knox were out there.
Mm-hmm.
Back-to-back possessions, Knox lost his man, a layup and a five-footer. Richmond made four fouls, gave up a lot of free throws, turnovers, didn't finish in transition, you know, had the ball on a break, got it blocked from behind. You just wasn't aware where the defensive player – just the lack of polish on those freshmen. Fland had a great finish, but then there were a segment in the first half where he disappeared for a while. I think it's just you're asking those players to do too much and – true freshman. And then you think, well, okay, he brought some players from Kentucky. Well, Big Z hardly played. I mean, they mm-hmm. you know, he came on halfway through the year. They benched him pretty quickly, played limited minutes. Wagner was hurt a good part of last year, wasn't really a factor in what they did because of an ankle injury. You know, Thero, yes, but it's like – so it's a completely new team. I mean, it's and all the it just looks unpolished. Defensive mistakes, that's polish. Their concepts are good, but they'll have breakdowns. And then the defensive rebound is a real problem because of the lack of bigs.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jay, you can subscribe to our podcast, Apple and Spotify. Search Whole Hog Sports. We've got a video version on YouTube. You can find that on our Whole Hog Sports YouTube page, and we also post it each day to our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can search those platforms, Whole Hog Sports, and find our pages. Since I got you here, I'll ask you about football here real quick. Just your thoughts on how the offseason has gone so far. I know we're pretty, you know, early into the offseason, but just based on the players that they've gotten, the players they've lost, how do you see this thing, you know, coming together as spring football nears?
Well, it's going to take a while. I mean, the one thing that's interesting, and I'm not a – I'm not going to pick any numbers for the lottery, or I'm not going to go to Vegas and pick a number on the roulette table or anything. But somebody asked me, I think it might have been Chuck Barrett on their morning show, what would happen in the offseason. I said I would expect at least 40 new players by when they enroll in January.
Yeah.
it's 40.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, that was just a guess, mm-hmm. but it's that was what I expected. And that's going to be the norm. You know, you're going to have 20 to 22 to 24, 25, you know, freshmen that you sign. You may get 18 of them to enroll early, and then you're going to have 20 to 22 transfers to you know, to rebuild your team. Then they'll reshuffle the deck a little bit after spring training mm-hmm. where they see some weaknesses. You know, maybe they don't have enough tight ends, or mm-hmm. maybe they need another linebacker or two. So that's what you're going to see. But, you know, somebody asked, well, why so many older players? Well, they're taking three stars. Would you rather have a 22-year-old three-star or a 17-year-old three-star come in these high school players that are coming in now, they're 17. Mm-hmm. They're not 22. That's 5 years difference. Some of these players they're bringing in from the portal are 23 and 24. And you tell me the difference in alignment.
And everybody else is doing that too.
Yeah. And you
don't
better.
Want to play a 17, 18-year-old against somebody else's 24-year-old.
They'll get their butts whipped.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I just know how that works.
Yeah, I mean, how many freshmen have you seen come in at Arkansas? I would guess probably less than five who just come in and they look physically ready.
Yeah, I mean, I think of Sean Andrews. I mean, and a few more. Billy Ray Smith would fit that. But to be able to play in the line for sure, right. You know, like it's different to say Batman Carroll comes in and plays at cornerback where he, you know, all it is his speed. Play on the outside. You know, Alex Collins was gifted and ready to play as a true freshman. But it's mm-hmm. it's and again, Darren McFadden, mm-hmm. Felix Jones, Peyton Hill. You know, that's a handful, Matt. Mm-hmm. You know, we could probably come up a list of about 10.
But on the line, not very many.
Sean Andrews, Billy Ray Smith, yeah. That's it. I mean, Dan Hampton, you know, was a redshirt sophomore when we realized that he might be, you know, a phenom. But he wasn't as a true freshman. I mean, he lived in the weight room. And the list just goes on and on. All Americans, you didn't notice them. You know, it's I think that you're really pushing it. Even Frank Ragnow, he just played four or five snaps a game as a true mm-hmm. freshman.
I was Nate Garner got hired as a head coach this week, D2 college out in South Carolina, and I was reading up about him, and he was an All-American as a senior. He never played before it was as a fifth-year senior. He never played before that, and I think a lot
scout team 3 years.
Some of it had to do yeah. with players who were ahead of him.
Yep.
There were good players on those lines, you know, in those seasons. Tony Hugo was one of the ones who played in front of him. He was an All-American, and so some of it was just waiting his time, but a lot of it was that he was not physically ready. And you don't see players do that anymore. You know, sit there and just wait their turn. Very rarely. Amarian Harris has at Arkansas, but he's a rare bird in this day and age.
Yeah, I was mentioning to my family at dinner a couple of nights ago, and our youngest daughter, Becca, was a Razorback Bell, and she hosted Nate Garner, sat with him
in
the stands on his official visit. That's all she did. She said she just sat with him in the stand. She goes, I wasn't a cleat chaser.
Thoughts on Sam Pittman and how, you know, this year, I mean, obviously it feels like he's lived on the hot seat for the last 2 years. And I know it's going to be that way, you know, again this year, and especially with the type of schedule that they've got. But just your thoughts on where he stands going into 25.
Yeah, I think that's just the nature of the beast now. I don't care if you're at a Power 5 school. The amount of money that fans are now contributing, the amount of access to social media, fans, Twitter, Facebook, mm-hmm. you know, the pressure is intense. And so I don't think I think they just live with that. And Danny Ford told me that the SEC is a two-game losing streak away from a hot seat, and we've had some two-game losing streaks in the Sam Pittman era. We've had it really for, you know, 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a constant thing. I thought they were competitive this year, except the Ole Miss game. Mm-hmm. I thought they played well. I thought they played Texas as well as anybody.
Yeah.
You know, put it into the fourth quarter. I thought that they They competed.
It's such a weird year. The games that I thought they were going to be competitive, they were not competitive. I thought that they would be more, when I'm thinking about home games, I thought they'd be more competitive with Ole Miss and LSU, and that Tennessee and Texas might run them off the field. And it turned out it was
just
the complete opposite. Tennessee and Texas, that was as good as they looked this year.
So what I saw a lot was inconsistent emotion. Hmm. And we go back to, you know, Coach Burrell's told me one time, this is 10-game schedule. Says you have one game where you're just really flat. You have a couple of games where you hit the emotional peak, the complete highs, and you're playing at a level that's beyond anything that you would have believed. I think that was Tennessee in Texas. They won the Tennessee game. They didn't win the Texas game. And then the others, they're just somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And that usually when you have a peak emotional effort, then you'll be flat the next week. And he I thought they were at a pretty good peak at Oklahoma State, mm-hmm. and they were really flat the week mm-hmm. after that. Mm-hmm. That you just didn't maintain that. And he says when you really do maintain it for a whole season at a pretty good level, you probably got 25 or 30 seniors. Mm-hmm. You know, that they're more of an even keel. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't, you know, that's an unusual year.
Well, and that was a different day for seniors, too, because those were players who had been in your program for four or five years. And now your seniors have been in your program for one or two, and in a lot of cases.
Or 3 months.
And I think that's – yeah, no, it's a good point. But, you know, and I think that's a reason – it is a reason why you're seeing so much imbalance in college football.
Unevenness.
Yeah, I mean, it's – The portal, I think the portal more so than the NIL. I think it's easy to, you know, for players probably to sit back and say, hey, I got my money. I don't, you know, and not work as hard. I think that there is some truth to that. But it feels like the transferring and the fact that you just can't keep teams together for very long anymore, that's causing this. Everybody says the SEC is down. I thought the SEC was as competitive this year as I've ever seen it, and that's why you get Kentucky going and beating Ole Miss and, you know, the 6-6 teams beating some of the top three or four teams. You don't see that in the other leagues.
Yeah, and I discount the bowl games, and I've heard you mention this. When you look at the portal, the people that are leaving and the opt-outs and, you know, I mean, going to the NFL.
Those aren't the teams that earn the right to be at the bowl game.
No, not the same team. And not the, you know, in who has their stinger and who doesn't. I give Sam Pittman credit. I thought they had their stinger for the bowl game. I thought Arkansas played really hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's what you said about the craziness. I looked at the Louisiana Tech roster. For one thing, there were a couple of players in the portal from Louisiana Tech. So I just mm-hmm. looked. This was like 3 weeks ago. And I looked all the way down, player by player, where they came from. There wasn't but two or three players that were straight from high school to Louisiana Tech. They were junior college players and transfers. Hmm. And I just, you know, how hard it is for those schools. Yep. They're being raided.
Baseball.
Yeah, you know they're in how they field a team, and I looked at the same thing when UAB came here. Mm-hmm. Their players were from everywhere, you know. They're cast offs from Auburn, mm-hmm. cast offs from Alabama. You know that you know basically went in the portal and found out there wasn't any place for them to go. You know, there's that end of the portal too that is it's disconcerting to me, but. We're just now figuring all this out. And by the time we figure it out, Matt, it's all going to change again.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like COVID. We remember the COVID year?
It seems like 20 years ago.
Yeah, but everything changed every 2 weeks. No. We're going to have full stadiums. We're going to have empty stadiums. We're not going to play. We are going to play.
We'll end on this. I you know, I used to say that a generation or an era of college football, you know, you might define it as a 15 to 20-year window. And now you're defining it as like a 2 to 3 year window because everything is changing so rapidly and so much that you can't say that college football in 2025 is the same game that you played in 2020. It's not. It's not even close.
Yeah, I think about the young people. They're trying to figure it out. They, you know, and we're telling them, well, it used to be like this. Yeah, we walked uphill against in the snow both ways.
Just think about how different college football was when Pittman took the job in December 2019 and what it is now. It's crazy. And, yep. and it's no wonder that the coaches are getting out of it and saying, hey, you young guys, you can take care of this and figuring this out.
You're right.
Yeah. Clay, it's good to see you.
Thank you.
All right. We appreciate you being with us. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Anthony Christensen will join us from Columbia, where the Razorback basketball team will play Missouri on Saturday afternoon. We'll preview that game. Pat Bradley also scheduled to join us tomorrow on our podcast. Hope we'll see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, or tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.